Coming to you from the mountains and the plains, the only conservative voices brave enough to push back. This is the Conservative Daily Podcast with Joe Otto.
That's what the Second Amendment was designed to do. If you're going to do something to nullify or take away my rights under the Constitution, come get it.
Max McGuire.
When you look at politicians on the left, they need to convince people that they are victims.
A resistance to the resistance. And now your hosts, Joe Otto and Max McGuire.
My name is Max McGuire. We're doing a special edition of the weekend podcast. Thanks everyone for joining us. As you all know, these weekend edition of the podcast, they tend to be more historical based, and they talk about the history that is relevant today. So we're going to talk a little bit about states' rights today. We're going to talk a lot about this case, Jacobson v. Massachusetts, which was a 1905 Supreme Court case upholding the legality and constitutionality of a Cambridge, Massachusetts requirement that all citizens be vaccinated against smallpox. So we're going to talk about that because that case serves as the backbone for all of the unconstitutional COVID-related lockdowns, restrictions that we've seen. So lots of people don't, we haven't really seen many people do a deep dive into Jacobson v. Massachusetts, explain why it really is all these COVID lockdowns are built up on a house of cards because the foundation is that weak. But we did see this week the Supreme Court kind of step away from Jacobson and rule that New York's unconstitutional crackdown on churches and synagogues was just that, unconstitutional. And it flew in the face of Jacobson, went far beyond anything that Jacobson ever would have allowed. So we covered this on the podcast earlier in the week, but I want to read it again. I love this part from Gorsuch's concurring opinion. He says, at the same time, the government has chosen to impose no capacity restrictions on certain businesses he considers essential. And it turns out the businesses the governor considers essential include hardware stores, acupuncturists, and liquor stores, bicycle repair shops, certain signage companies, accountants, lawyers, and insurance agents are all essential too. So at least according to the governor, it may be unsafe to go to church, but it is always fine to pick up another bottle of wine, shop for a bike, or spend the afternoon exploring your distal points and meridians. Who knew public health would so perfectly align with secular convenience? So I want to read that again because I really liked it. Amazingly, Andrew Cuomo responded to this ruling that everything he's been doing this whole time against churches and synagogues was unconstitutional. Cuomo responded by saying it's irrelevant. He says the Supreme Court ruling is irrelevant because he took away the restrictions right before the Supreme Court ruled. Now, New York tried to do this and actually succeeded before Amy Coney Barrett was on the bench. There was a law in New York City that basically said you cannot bring a gun outside, right? If you own a gun legally, you can bring it to a shooting range in the city, but there was no legal way for you actually to transport that gun out of the city. So that was challenged. And what the city did is they revoked the statute. The city and the state revoked the statute right before the Supreme Court could rule, rendering the whole issue moot. Now, at the time, the conservatives on the bench, they said, no, we should rule on it because New York City at any point can reimpose these restrictions at will. And Chief Justice John Roberts sided with the leftists and said, no, it's moot. We can't rule on it. Well, this time, New York tried to do it again. They knew that the Supreme Court was going to rule on the constitutionality of their restrictions, that churches and synagogues, depending on whether it was red or orange, could only have 10 or 25 people inside respectively. And as we covered on the podcast on Thanksgiving, if you're a devout Orthodox Jew, you need at least 10 men to be able to perform many of these ceremonies. So that would mean that women wouldn't be allowed to attend. Obviously unconstitutional. Well, Governor Cuomo has decided that it's irrelevant. And he's not going to listen to it because it's irrelevant in his eyes. But this is something else that came out over the week. This is from Anthony Fauci. Fauci has declared that COVID-19 won't let up in time for Christmas and New Year's celebrations. So he's already warning us there will be no Christmas. There will be no Christmas this year because of a respiratory virus. And I'll use this moment to tell everyone, please check out the link in our description. Buy one of our Come and Take It Christmas t-shirts, modeled after the Texas Revolutionary's battle flag. And make sure you tell everyone by wearing it that you're not going to stand for us to, you're not going to stand for them to take away our right to celebrate Christmas. But it's an interesting thing because the government's ability to say Christmas is canceled. Or as we saw in New York, the government's ability to arrest people for driving to someone else's house for Thanksgiving. The government's ability to at least theoretically arrest people for gathering outside. Where I live in Texas, we are under an order that if we gather outside after the hours of 10 p.m. tonight, that's a $1,000 fine, even if it's just in our backyards. And people are saying that they didn't get a text. Yeah, I didn't send a text. I'm just doing this on my own. I don't have the whole team behind me to do all the different parts. I wanted to make sure we got out on time, so there was no text today. But I'll try to make sure that they go out in the future when I'm all alone. All of these lockdowns, the shelter at home place, they all are based on a single ruling, and that is Jacobson v. Massachusetts. It came down in 1905, and it had to do with, as I mentioned at the start, Cambridge, Massachusetts had a law in the book, a statute, an ordinance, that said everyone must be vaccinated against smallpox. Now, smallpox is a very different bug than the novel coronavirus, COVID-19. Very different, right? The worst form of smallpox had a 30% mortality rate, meaning if you got it, every 10 people that got it, 3 of them died, right? COVID-19 is nowhere near that. COVID-19, I'm not even going to attempt to say the mortality rate because I'll be slammed as fake news. But COVID-19 is orders of magnitude lower than what smallpox is. And listen, smallpox is one of the great killers in human history, right? It's one of the great plagues that was beset upon the human race. And we have a vaccine against it. Most people don't even need to get the vaccine now because it's been, for all intents and purposes, eradicated. And if there is a breach from a lab, or if someone gets it overseas, then we have vaccines available for people, but we don't require people to get the vaccine because we don't need it. We don't need everyone to be vaccinated against a bug that just isn't here anymore. But smallpox was a different animal. Smallpox killed 30% of the people who got it, the worst form of smallpox. That's pre-vaccine. So when the vaccine came out, people were overjoyed because there were literally families of 10 that had been cut in half by this disease, right? Or had 3 family members lost in disease, or even more, right? Just because it's the average doesn't mean that everyone would suffer the same way. And even if you survived smallpox, you were often left with permanent scarring on your face. You were left disabled. It was a much more difficult life. So there was a real public interest in vaccinating against smallpox to prevent that disease from ravaging the community. So as I mentioned, Cambridge, Massachusetts in 1905, actually before that, had a ordinance on the books that said, you must be vaccinated. You must be vaccinated against smallpox. And they gave a couple of exemptions, especially for children, that you could get. But they said, you must be vaccinated. If you don't want to be vaccinated, you must pay $5. That was the fine. If you didn't want to be vaccinated, you could pay $5 and you opted out. Now, $5 at the time, that was worth between $140 and $150. So it seems low now, but $5 back then was significant. But important, as we go through this case and what it meant and how it's being misinterpreted today, paying $5 or even paying $140 to get out of a vaccination requirement is very, very different from what we are seeing today, right? There is no opt-out from Andrew Cuomo's crazy executive orders, right? There is no opt-out from the shelter-in-place order that's now going to last 3 weeks in Los Angeles. You cannot pay $5 to opt out. You are locked down. You cannot leave. You cannot go to church. You cannot go anywhere, right? There's no opt-out. But in Cambridge, Massachusetts, there was. So what ended up happening? This man, Henning Jacobson, this is actually a picture from the late 19th century. I believe it was 1876 or 78 is when that picture was taken. So he got a little older by the time this case came around in 1905. But Henning Jacobson decided, I'm not going to pay the $5. I don't think that this is constitutional. I don't think it's constitutional for you to shove a needle in my arm or force me to pay for the right not to have a needle shoved in my arm. So he resisted. He didn't ask for an exemption. He just said, I'm not getting it, and I'm not paying your $5. And just to show how the legal system used to work, that case over a fine of $5 made it all the way to the Supreme Court. Henning Jacobson had the ability to pay the $5. He just didn't want it. He didn't think it was constitutional. So it got all the way to the Supreme Court. And these were the basic facts of the case. As I mentioned, a Massachusetts law allowed cities to require residents to be vaccinated against smallpox. Cambridge adopted such an ordinance with some exceptions. Jacobson refused to comply with the requirements and was fined $5 he didn't want to pay. The question of the case was, did the mandatory vaccination law violate Jacobson's 14th Amendment right to liberty? Right? Because the 14th Amendment says that states without due process cannot violate your right to liberty. Having a needle shoved in your arm feels like a pretty big infringement on your liberty. But the court concluded, they said that the court held that the law was a legitimate exercise of the state's police power to protect the public health and safety of its citizens. Local boards of health determined when mandatory vaccinations were needed, thus making the requirement neither unreasonable nor arbitrarily imposed. So I want to make sure we get this straight, because as we talk about the new stuff that's going on, the Supreme Court said that if there is a disease that is known to kill up to 30% of everyone who gets it, cities and states, in this case, because Massachusetts empowered the cities to do it, local jurisdictions have the authority to require you to get vaccinated or to charge you $5 if you don't want to. A bug that kills 30%, you either get vaccinated or you pay $5. Again, the equivalent of around $140, $150 in today's money. At no point was Jacobson v. Massachusetts a blank check for states to do whatever they wanted anytime there was any kind of virus. This was a specifically tailored ruling for this one case in Cambridge that said if you have the option to pay $5, right, you cannot refuse to pay it. That's your out. It's not unconstitutional for them to say pay $5 or get the vaccine. And here is the main finding from it. Again, talking about police power, decided on February 20th, 1905. The police power of a state must be held to embrace at least such reasonable regulations established directly by legislative enactment to protect public health and safety. So it has to be reasonable, right? It has to be the least possible. Like we would look today, this kind of way of thinking, the strict way of thinking didn't apply then, but it has to be a tailored approach that only goes as far as necessary, because constitutional rights are in play here. Well, the left has decided that Jacobson should give them a clean slate, a blank check, I mean, that they should be able to use this ruling about a 1905 vaccination fight in Cambridge, Massachusetts, of which there was a $5 opt-out. The left says that this is solid enough to basically give states the ability to do whatever they want. So when Nevada said you cannot go to church, but you can go to a casino, and the churches fought all the way to the Supreme Court, and ultimately Amy Coney Barrett wasn't on the bench then, so the leftists won because they had Chief Justice John Roberts. They determined that Jacobson allowed the states to use this police power to protect public health. But again, as I said, this story, this case, was a virus that killed up to 30% of everyone who got it, and you could opt out by paying $5. What we're seeing around the country, there's no opt-out. The virus does not kill 30% of the people. I can say that safely without getting fact-checked. It's below 1%. And I'm not going to give an exact number, because the WHO or the CDC, they change it every day. So I'm not going to risk getting deplatformed by Facebook, but it's a very, very small number. Very, very small. So they said the Supreme Court said that it was constitutional because Jacobson gave the state of Nevada the authority to use their police power to protect the public health. It gave them the power to say that churches are more dangerous than casinos, even if there's no scientific basis for any of it. So this week, I want to read a little bit more of Gorsuch's dissent. I believe I pulled this from Gorsuch's dissent. It might be Kavanaugh's, but I think it's Gorsuch's. I want to read a little bit more about from Gorsuch's dissent, concurring opinion. Because he goes into more depth about Jacobson and why it's unreasonable for states and the left to believe that this case from 1905 over a $5 fine could possibly be used to just give them a blank check to do whatever they want. So here's the first bit. Next, consider the right asserted. Mr. Jacobson claimed that he possessed an implied substantive due process right to bodily integrity that emanated from the 14th Amendment and allowed him to avoid not only the vaccine, but also the $5 fine, as he says, about $140 today, and the need to show that he qualified for an exemption. This court disagreed. But what does that have to do with our circumstances? Even if judges may impose emergency restrictions on rights that some of them have found hiding in the Constitution's penumbras, I've actually never even seen that word before, it does not follow that the same fate should befall the textually explicit right to religious exercise. Finally, considering the different nature of this of the restriction, in Jacobson, individuals could accept the vaccine, pay the fine, or identify a basis for exemption. The imposition of Mr. Jacobson's claimed right to bodily integrity thus was avoidable and relatively modest. It easily survived rational basis review and might even have survived strict scrutiny, given the opt-outs available to certain objectors. Here, by contrast, the state has effectively sought to ban all traditional forms of worship in affected zones whenever the governor decrees, and for as long as he chooses. Nothing in Jacobson purported to address, let alone approve, such serious and long-lasting intrusions into settled constitutional rights. In fact, Jacobson explained that the challenge law survived only because it did not contravene the Constitution of the United States or infringe any right granted or secured by that instrument. Very, very interesting, right? So I'm gonna keep reading a little bit more. But the only reason that Jacobson happened is they determined that it did not infringe on any right granted or secured by the Constitution or the Bill of Rights. Well, as we see here in these states like New York, Nevada, California, that isn't the case. You cannot make the argument that shutting down churches does not, quote, infringe any right granted or secured, end quote, by the Constitution. It obviously does. Just like you'd say the same if they said you cannot, the New York Times has to close because of the pandemic, or the Washington Post. They'd be up in arms. They're all a violation of the First Amendment. Same goes for churches. Really, really important part. And then let's read this last bit. Why have some mistaken this court's modest decision in Jacobson for a towering authority that overshadows the Constitution during a pandemic? In the end, I can only surmise that much of the answer lies in a particular judicial impulse to stay out of the way in times of crisis. But if that impulse may be understandable or even admirable in other circumstances, we may not shelter in place when the Constitution is under attack. Things never go well when we do. So it's an interesting question that Gorsuch poses, and he does a very good job with it. And again, make sure you guys hit that share button. Make sure you give us a thumbs up. Make sure you like the video, comment. And when this gets posted to YouTube after the fact, make sure that you give us a thumbs up. Make sure you hit that subscribe button. Hit the bell for notifications as well. It's an interesting thought experiment, right? Because you cannot claim Jacobson for something that goes far and beyond anything that Jacobson even considered, right? If a virus that kills 30% of everyone who gets it imposes a $5 fine, right? You cannot then say that a respiratory virus that barely kills anyone in comparison, relatively, fact checkers, relatively, you cannot claim that a less severe virus could possibly justify complete and total lockdown, complete and total shutdowns of constitutionally protected activities. Not just even with churches, right? Remember, in the early days of the pandemic in New York and California, they shuttered gun stores. They labeled, in New Jersey too, New Jersey backed down after a lawsuit. But many of these states considered gun stores to be non-essential businesses. So in California, it was really, really ridiculous because in California, you go to buy a gun, you have a waiting period, right? They make you do a waiting period because God forbid you have the gun when you want the gun or need the gun. You need a cool down period. So in California, when they shut down gun stores, there were people who had already bought guns but had not completed their waiting period yet. So they had paid for the guns. They were patiently waiting as the state required, but they were not allowed to take possession of the guns because the state intervened and said it's a non-essential business and closed it down. Right? You look at places like Colorado, where Colorado actually slowed down background checks at one point. New Jersey now is slowing down fingerprinting background checks. New York has slowed down fingerprinting, saying, oh, it's too dangerous. There's no way to fingerprint you and be safe while doing it. Well, no, then you can't fingerprint, right? If you set a fingerprint requirement to keep and bear arms and you're saying it's too dangerous and you're not going to do the fingerprinting, then that requirement needs to go and you need to give the, give the permits without the fingerprinting. But no, they're trying to use it as an excuse not to process any gun permits whatsoever. So it's not just First Amendment freedom of religion. It's not just the Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms. Right? You also have a right to a speedy trial, right? Before a jury of your peers. In the early days of the pandemic, we saw courts just closing down out of fear for public safety. Well, how can you possibly say that defendant's right to a speedy trial is preserved when he was denied that right due to fear of a virus that, as we've told, kills less than 1% of everyone who gets it? Not talking about smallpox. We're talking about a respiratory virus that is much more survivable. Right? All these constitutional rights up in flames. Well, not up, but violated. Severely violated. And there's no $5 opt-out. There's no ability to go in, pay your $5 to get your speedy trial. There's no way to pay your $5 to get your gun. No way to pay your $5 to be able to go to church. Now, would that survive constitutional scrutiny? I doubt it, too. Because we also know that it's unconstitutional to have what's known as a poll tax. In the Jim Crow South, Democrat states, I'm very, very eager to make sure everyone knows these were Democrat states, decided to impose what they call poll taxes. And if you wanted to vote, you had to pay a tax, but it was designed to stop poor African Americans from voting because they couldn't afford the tax, right? There was also poll tests. Now, it's one thing to say you want people to be educated voters. I think every voter should be educated. It's another thing to say if you want to register to vote, you need to name the first, middle, and last name of every county judge in the state. No one could reasonably be expected to be able to do that. And yet that's what the poll tests in the Jim Crow South required of African Americans who wanted to register to vote. So when you place those restrictions, whether it be a test, whether it be a fine, or a tax, when you place those restrictions on obviously protected constitutional activities, courts have always said that they don't hold up to scrutiny. And yet, for whatever reason, gun permits are allowed to cost money. In Colorado, where I used to live, the maximum that a county can charge you for a permit to carry a concealed weapon is $152.50. That's not including the cost of the that's not including the cost of the actual class you need to take. There are some people that offer free classes, but most of them are paid. So when you add it all up, it costs you more than $200 to get a concealed carry permit in Colorado. Many other states, like New York, it's much more expensive, especially if you have to challenge it. Right? For whatever reason, that right has always kind of survived scrutiny of whether or not that's constitutional or not. But the main point of this is that when you look at Jacobson, there's no opt-out. You can't opt out of Andrew Cuomo's restriction ordering police to set up checkpoints and pull anyone over if they're suspected of driving to someone's house. You cannot opt out of the governor of Oregon's requirement that no one have more than six people inside their home, and then urging neighbors to tattle on them and turn them into police if they are suspected of having more people in their home. There's no opt out. You can't say, well, I have an exemption. You can't say, well, I'll pay $5 to be able to have my Thanksgiving as I want. There's no opt-out. So they're taking a case in Jacobson that really has no business. They're taking the core finding of Jacobson, which is that states have the authority to use their police power to protect public health. Fine. But that's not a blanket, unchallengeable statement. That's not something you just say. It's in totality, right? States can't just do whatever they want. Again, since 1905, we've had other court cases that have defined how states have to act if they're going to violate someone's rights or infringe on someone's rights for a legitimate governmental interest. They have to do it in a really specifically tailored approach and in the least amount necessary to achieve the end, right? They can't just completely get rid of your rights. They have to have a tailored approach, a narrowly tailored approach. That's what strict scrutiny means. We don't have that here. We don't have a sniper approach. Like when I talk about like strict scrutiny, that's a sniper approach, right? You have a sniper rifle or a hunting rifle with a scope and you shoot one bullet at one location. You're like, okay, this is where I'm going to hit, and I hit it. That is the strict scrutiny approach. What the left loves to do is the shotgun approach, where instead of only aiming at the target that they need to hit, they shoot the shotgun, which anyone who knows shotgun, that you have a shell, has a lot of little BBs, and instead of one BB hitting the target, you pepper it with all BBs. And you know what they say? They say, oh, wow, I hit the bullseye. Well, yeah, you hit the bullseye with one pellet. Look what you did with the rest of them. That's how Democrats have approached this pandemic. They've used the shotgun approach. They haven't had a narrowly tailored set of restrictions just to meet the need, right? They've just shut everything down. Said no church, no gun stores, no public. Well, that's actually not true. You can assemble in public if you're assembling for Black Lives Matter. But none of it. You can't do any of it. And if you do it, if you have more than six people in your home, we're going to fine you. And in the San Antonio area of Texas, if you go in your backyard after 10 p.m., you're going to get fined. Right? Nowhere in Jacobson did the Supreme Court ever give cities the right to do these things. They upheld the legitimacy of Cambridge, Massachusetts, saying, get vaccinated against smallpox, prove that you're exempt, or pay $5. And somehow, we've allowed that ruling to be twisted and warped and used to justify gross infringements. This has been going on for almost the entire year. Since mid to late March, we've seen churches restricted, gun stores restricted, right? Your right to a speedy trial before a jury of your peers restricted. We've seen all of this restricted in the name of public health. At some point, something has to give. And I want to play this clip. This is Justice Alito giving a speech before the Federalist Society. I'm not going to play the whole speech. I highly recommend that you go watch it. It's very, very good. He touches on a lot of this. He touches on Jacobson. And I don't want to make it redundant and have him say all the same things I just said. But he touches on it and he explains how ridiculous it is to take that case and apply it to complete shelter and home orders. It isn't supposed to be that way. But this is, let's just play this. It's a couple minutes. Justice Alito explaining how ridiculous it has been to see how states have bastardized Jacobson. Let's watch.
The pandemic has resulted in previously unimaginable restrictions on individual liberty. Now, notice what I am not saying or even implying. I am not diminishing the severity of the virus's threat to public health. And putting aside what I will say shortly about a few Supreme Court cases, I'm not saying anything about the legality of COVID restrictions, nor am I saying anything about whether any of these restrictions represent good public policy. I'm a judge, not a policymaker. All that I'm saying is this, and I think it is an indisputable statement of fact. We have never before seen restrictions as severe, extensive, and prolonged as those experienced for most of 2020. Now again, let me be clear. I'm not disputing that broad wording may be appropriate in statutes designed to address a wide range of emergencies, the nature of which may be hard to anticipate. And I'm not passing judgment on this particular statute. I want to make two different points. First, what we see in this statute, and in what was done under it, is a particularly developed example of where the law in general has been going for some time, in the direction of government by executive officials who were thought to implement policies based on expertise, and in the purest form, scientific expertise. Second, laws giving an official so much discretion can, of course, be abused. And whatever one may think about the COVID restrictions, we surely don't want them to become a recurring feature after the pandemic has passed. Over the summer, the Supreme Court received two applications to stay COVID restrictions that blatantly discriminated against houses of worship, one from California, one from Nevada. In both cases, the court allowed the discrimination to stand. The only justification given was that we should defer to the judgment of the governors, because they have the responsibility to safeguard the public health. If what I have said so far does not convince you that religious liberty is in danger of becoming a second-class right, consider a case that came shortly after the Nevada case. The FDA has long had a rule providing that a woman who wants a medication abortion must go to a clinic to pick up the drug. The idea is that it's important for the woman to receive instruction about the drug at that time. The rule was first adopted in 2000, and it has been kept on the books ever since.
So that's the end of that. I just realized that Facebook took us down briefly. I'm interested to know why they chose to do that. We'll have to see. I just put it back up, but that's no consolation for anyone who's watching. Facebook took us down for some whatever reason. They decided that they didn't want us to finish this episode of the podcast. That's a shame. That's a real shame. But that happened. We did continue recording, so when we post this on YouTube in a little bit, it will be in its entirety, so you'll be able to see what Samuel Alito said. Interesting. It's a Supreme Court justice giving a speech, and at that very moment, Facebook decided to take us down. Really, really shameful, but ultimately not all that surprising. So when we put this up on YouTube in a couple minutes after we finish the live stream on Facebook, you'll be able to watch it in its entirety. Just jump to the end and watch Samuel Alito's remarks. Interestingly enough, they cut him off right as he was about to start making his arguments. This was a clip that was put together by a leftist rag. It's just easier to use what they put together than to have to watch the whole thing and cut it myself. They cut that clip off right as he was making his point. So I highly recommend you go back and watch the entirety of it. I think it was about an hour long, maybe a little less. But it was a very, very good speech. And I apologize for everyone who just got kicked off of the Facebook stream for whatever reason. As soon as we started talking about playing Samuel Alito's speech, a sitting Supreme Court justice, they decided that they were going to take us down at that point. They didn't hit us with a ban. They just decided to mess with the feed and stop it from functioning correctly. Basically what he was saying was that we've never had a moment in our history where so many rights have been violated in the name of public health. And when you try and use this case, this 1905 smallpox case, which was a very bad disease requiring vaccination or an exemption or $5 opt-out, right? You cannot, nowhere in that 1905 case is any justification for the biggest, the most populous state in the country, California, saying no one's allowed to go to church anymore. Or as we saw in many California counties saying, you can go to church, but you're not allowed to sing. Right? Unlike Joe Biden, who believes that it's the Book of Palms, it's the Book of Psalms. The Psalms are meant to be sung. Depending on what sect of Christianity you adhere to, most believe that prayer is most powerful when sung, and that singing a prayer is more powerful. It's more likely to reach God's ears, right? It's more powerful to sing the prayer, the psalm, than it is just to speak it or just to think it in your head. All prayer works, but it's the idea that if you sing it, and this is across religions, right? Judaism, they sing. You look at Islam when they sing out from the minarets the call to prayer, right? There's lots of singing in the Abrahamic faith. It's believed that singing is the most powerful form of prayer. So when California says you're not allowed to sing because of a respiratory virus that, again, less than 1% pass away from, you can't find that. You can't find that in Jacobson. Right, you can't find, nowhere in Jacobson does it say that you're not allowed to play musical instruments, even if it's the guitar, right? There were California counties that said no musical instruments at first, because musical instruments, they, at least the idiots that drafted the order said, oh, well, you blow through a musical instrument, that releases the virus and blows it all over everyone in front of you. Well, what about guitars? What about a cello? What about a violin? What about a piano? An instrument that doesn't require a reed, right? You don't have to blow through it. And then they say, oh, well, that makes sense. It just goes to show how little they actually paid attention and thought out a lot of their restrictions. There really is no basis for what we're seeing today in Jacobson. When Ginsburg was on the bench and Chief Justice John Roberts was the swing vote and he kept siding with the left, we saw over and over again the Supreme Court said, yes, this complies with Jacobson. And since Amy Coney Barrett has been confirmed, we've seen a swing back towards rational thought, which is no, you cannot take a 1905 case about a smallpox vaccine that had a $5 opt-out and use that to justify everything we're seeing around the country. Just it doesn't work like that. So I'm hopeful that now we'll see the Supreme Court, as they did in New York with the Catholic Church and with the Orthodox Jewish community, say that it is unconstitutional. Even if the previous rulings from earlier this year would have justified it, I'm hopeful that the Supreme Court will start taking more of these cases, taking cases of gun stores saying they just shut us down again. They should take those cases and use those cases as a vessel to declare that the Second Amendment is a primary right. It's not a secondary right that can be violated at whim. Your Second Amendment rights are important, and you must use the strictest of scrutiny if you're going to do anything that violates it. That's what I'm hopeful the Supreme Court will do. Because ultimately, we got to get back to normal, and we can do so safely. You can wear your mask, you can social distancing, all the things that I'm required to say so I don't get shut down by Facebook or YouTube, right? But this idea that we're going to go a year, this whole thing that we're going to go a year and we're just not going to have church, or as Anthony Fauci said, I can say at the beginning, that COVID-19 won't let up in time for Christmas. There is no legal or constitutional basis for what Fauci said. He has no right as a government official to cancel Christmas. He has no right whatsoever. So I'm hopeful that the Supreme Court and the other lower courts, seeing what the Supreme Court just did, will wise up and make sure that these kinds of things aren't allowed anymore. But unfortunately, what we're seeing from the states is we're seeing a rush to reimpose lockdowns, to reimpose shutdowns, to reimpose shelter-in-place orders. And just like what we saw in New York, they're going to impose it. And by the time it gets to the Supreme Court, they're going to pull it away, hoping to render the case moot so the Supreme Court can't rule on it, and then they'll reimpose it again. Right? And that's another good thing that's come out of Amy Coney Barrett being added to the bench. It looks like the Supreme Court is done with the idea of Democrats slightly tweaking a law to render a case moot to prevent the Supreme Court from issuing a ruling. So I'm very hopeful for that as well. So again, I'm sorry that Facebook took us down right there. We'll have the whole video up on YouTube shortly. It takes 10, 15, 20 minutes to get up there. But in the meantime, I do encourage you to go and listen to Samuel Alito's speech before the Federalist Society. Now, I just want to make sure that we categorize it the way the leftists did. They said it was a politically charged speech, and said it was something you'd expect to hear from a politician. No, it's something who has actually a strong foundation in the Constitution and in the law, saying that everything happening around us is BS. So I highly recommend you watch that. And in the next 10, 15, 20 minutes, when this gets uploaded to YouTube, you can go ahead and watch the cut up version of the speech that we included in our broadcast today. Well, that's going to be it for this edition of the Conservative Daily Podcast. Thank you all for watching. Let me know if you like the weekend versions of the podcast that we've been doing. I hope you do. I like it. It's a way to step back a little bit and kind of step back away from the news of the day and talk about the overarching issues, whether it be history, political theory, court cases, that the media is deliberately not sharing. Like the media is deliberately not telling you that how all of the COVID restrictions are built up on a house of cards of Jacobson v. Massachusetts. So I hope you like this. If you do, let me know. Let me mention this. Next week, we're going to do we're going to do a book club. We're going to do a book club, and we're going to talk about Alexis de Tocqueville's Democracy in America. So by all means, you can read the entire book. If you have the time, do it. It's a very, very long book. But what I wanted to focus on was three chapters, and I'll make sure that we put them on our Facebook page, and we'll start sharing them through the week. Three chapters. Let me see if I can find them. I believe it starts on... I'll post the link in the description. I'll make sure I put it on the Facebook page. Alexis Tocqueville's Democracy in America. We've mentioned it on the podcast before. It is a very, very good book. You don't necessarily need to buy it, but if you do, it's a great one to have and refer to. Alexis de Tocqueville was a French Renaissance man, kind of. He went to America to study why American democracy was working. And when he found out it really wasn't a democracy, it was a republic. Ding, 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 ding. And there were specific safeguards in place to prevent what he called the tyranny of the majority. So what we're going to be covering is actually, we're going to look at chapters 6, 7, and 8 of, I believe, volume 2. So chapters 6, 7, and 8 of volume 2. I'll put the link in the description. chapter 6, 7, and 8 of Volume 2. Let me just type this out. 6, 7, 8 of Volume 2. And those three chapters are, what are the real advantages that American society gains from the government of democracy? And then it says, of the omnipotence of the majority in the United States and its effects. And then chapter 8, which is the really important one, of what tempers tyranny of the majority in the United States. So on the PDF I just shared, it goes from pages 375 to 450. So it's about 75 pages. So it isn't that hard. There's a lot of footnotes that you can read or not read. It's a pretty fast read. And just remember, this is back when the world looked to the United States to figure out how to do things. Since then, we've kind of become the enemy of the world. I think part of that is because we decided for a while to try and be the world's policeman. And then we elected Trump, who a lot of world leaders and the powerful people in the world didn't like. But they've kind of stopped doing it. So it's a good read from that perspective, because back then, the United States, and even I'd say still to this day, the United States is one of the only truly functioning forms of democracy that also protects individual rights and liberties. Important caveat. So make sure you check that out. Link in the description, chapter 6, 7, and 8 of volume 2 of Alexis de Tocqueville's Democracy in America. So we'll be going over that next Saturday. So make sure you check it out. It's about 75 pages. Well, that's going to be it for this edition of the podcast. If you like the podcast, please do subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts. We are now the number 8 most popular political podcast on Apple Podcasts. We're number 33 when it comes to news. We're way up there, right? And when you look at all podcasts in general, regardless of the actual topic or category, we're only a couple away from Joel Osteen, and we're only a couple away from Mike Tyson. That's how sharply we have rose in the ranking. So if you want to help us continue to do that, make sure you subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts. Very, very good. If you don't have an iPhone, a MacBook, or the like, you can check out us. We're on Google Play Store, Spotify, Pandora, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, or Podbean. We go live Monday through Saturday on Facebook and YouTube around 2 p.m. Eastern. So make sure you like and follow our Facebook page, and also subscribe, hit the bell for notifications on YouTube as well. If you want to get a text alert when we go live during the week, and I promise I'll get it all figured out for weekend ones as well, text FREEDOM to 89517, you'll get a text alert. There's also a link to join our email newsletter to receive our action alerts as well. And again, check out the link in the description for the Conservative Daily Store. Pick up one of our Come and Take It Christmas t-shirts. We have them in white, and we have them in assorted colors. And show everyone that you're not going to stand for Anthony Fauci or any other leftist or public health official trying to cancel Christmas. So again, that's going to be it for this edition of the podcast. Remember, everyone, that the fight to take back our country clearly isn't over, but the only way we win is if we all stand up and fight together.